This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. We were back in the office today. It was nice to be back in and see everybody. We are social distancing, and those who want to are masking up. So I told my beloved I would wear a mask all week, so I did that. We are kind of loosening a little bit, but you know, I mean, that happens. So we've been trying to be very protective of Lynette's mom and just telling her, look, hunker down, don't go anywhere, we'll bring you groceries. But you know, we've done that for long enough now that Lynette decided my beloved is working on cleaning out her craft room downstairs and getting organized and that kind of stuff. So her mom has been staying with us for the last couple of days, which, you know what? That's just fine. Everything's good. And they have gotten some good work done downstairs. So that's good. All is well. So that's fine. It's National Pizza Party Day tomorrow. You know, and then, let's see, the next week, I think, is Memorial Day. So I won't do much for Memorial Day. Then the next week is National Ketchup Day, I think. Won't do much for that, but I got a little, you know, got a little t-shirt and a red Zenti suit, and so we'll do that. And then the next week is really what I'm working on now, which is National Donut Day. That is the 5th of June, so I've been getting some different things in, and I've got to send some stuff back, but it'll be fairly simple, so that'll be fine. Then once we're into National Donut Day, I think June 12th is actually Magna Carta Day, so I've got to decide if I'm doing something for Magna Carta Day. Magna Carta Day is, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. That really is kind of the first glimmers of what we know as individual rights and moving away from the absolute authority of the king, and et cetera, et cetera. And I've got to do some more research to kind of get myself all squared around as to what's that. And then the next week, I think, is Father's Day. And then I can't remember what comes after that. So we'll go from there. I am as well working on International Cat Day, which is coming up in August. I think that's the first part of August. So we'll see there. There may be a little something there that might be extra the week after it, but we'll see. All things in their own time. So everything went fine at work this week. We have big project I've been working on that it's just one of those projects you get into initially and you think, oh yeah, we got this under control, and then as you're going along, you're meeting with the user community, and at some point in the user community demonstrations, someone heavily sighs, oh yeah, and then we have to account for X, whatever X is. And it just goes complex on you, and it just gets... Oh, yeah. But we look like we're at the end of that now. I've been reviewing this week, making sure that we're ready to deploy, and had a couple of meetings this week where we just had some few little final tweaks, but had that final meeting today, and we look like we're in place, and so... It's going to be a matter of, you know, getting all the pieces lined up and getting things squared away. And then we'll go into beta, and we'll just wait and see how we do on beta and, you know, what needs to be changed from there. So all is well. All is well. Things have been puttering along. I just looked up as I was traveling under a bridge and I saw an LED array for lights, and I saw the coolest thing. On YouTube, yesterday, day before last. I'm doing a Cat in the Hat thing for International Cat Day. And so I'm gonna do a deal. Well, I won't say what I'm going to do, but I won't say what I'm gonna do. But I'm looking for a way to have like a fishbowl and reproduce something with the fish in the fishbowl. I'm looking for a way to reproduce some sort of motion in there. And I may just do something really silly and just easy. It probably will just be silly and easy this year. But I came across this thing where I was looking up zoetropes, and I was looking at different ways to do zoetropes, which, in case you don't know what a zoetrope is, it is the old-timey kind of animation stuff where you have a cylinder and it has slots in it, and then on the other side of the cylinder, printed on the inside, as you're looking down through these slots, there's different little animations. There is a given animation that is moving through frames on the inside, and then you spin this disc and it goes fast enough that you get glimpses of these frames that are actually drawn on the inside of the cylinder, and it makes a little animation because of persistence of vision. So, hey, you know, zoetropes, you can look it up, it's very cool. There's a couple of people, I don't know if they're all guys, a couple of people who have figured out how to do this with strobe lights and three-dimensional models. And it is the coolest thing. 4D, I think, is the company where they're getting ready to actually sell kits where you can make your own. And what they do is they do 3D modeling of little figures, and then they mount these things all on a disc, and then they have an LED array above the disc, and it's timed as the disc spins, the LED array strobes. LED array strobes. I'm right at the end of my 45-hour fast. So, I'm a little tired, but I'm about to get happy. The light strobes, and it freezes the disc just for an instance to give your eyes a chance to lock on to the persistence of vision. And when that happens, it actually looks like these little 3D figures are moving. So, like, they've got one of them that they did where innermost on the wheel, there's a clamshell that opens up, a cylinder with like a clamshell on the top of it. It opens up, this little fish appears out of this clamshell and appears to swim out towards the outer edge of the disc, where it then swallows another fish that's already out there. It is very clever. And this disc, it looks like it's divided up maybe into 12 parts or 10 parts or something like that. And all of these little 3D models are all done in a specific frame of animation, so that it looks like these fish are continually swimming outward from the inner diameter of this disc and then swallowing other fish that are out there. It is really spectacularly good. And it works from a complete field of vision. So, I mean, it's real live 3D with things that are just little 3D models, and yet it animates. It's very cool. It's very cool. You can go on YouTube and look for Zoetrope or 4D. I think 4D Zoetrope. It is very, very cool. So I was looking at that. I don't think I can do anything like that for the fishbowl. Maybe not this year, but I was thinking, is there some way that I could mount an LED strobe on the top of a little fishbowl because it's Cat in the Hat, etc., etc. Anyways, it's just marvelous. It's just marvelous what people figure out of how they... It's just marvelous. So that was fun. Anyways, so family is good, all is well, everybody's still healthy, which is good. I don't think I've brought anything home yet. So we're good. We're good. God is kind. It's been a gorgeous run of days here. We've had rain, beautiful rain. That wonderful smell that you have of the rain after it's rained. I've been out in the mornings, either running or walking. And came out of work today, and man, it's a gorgeous day. It's just beautiful. All is well. All is well. So, I came across an article, and I should say right now that if I recall this article correctly, there is going to be a few things in this article that are gruesome. Flat out gruesome. So, if gruesome is not good, then you should probably, I'll try to warn you when it's coming up, but you should either skip over the part when I say, okay, this is gruesome, or you should just turn off the podcast right now. So, the article, I came across this article, and I read the title, and I thought, oh yeah, that'll be interesting. The title of the article is How Pandemics End. So, how do we know we're out of this? I thought, well, that's pretty good. That's a good topic. How Pandemics End. This is by Gina Colata, I think. K-O-L-A-T-A. So, she reports in this article that according to historians, pandemics typically have two types of ending. The medical, which occurs when the incidence of death, when the incidence and death rates plummet, and social, when the epidemic of fear about the disease wanes. Now, I will say this week that I was listening to some podcasts, and they reported that there were some politicians who had claimed that we couldn't open up the country or open up a state until the death rates from COVID-19 fell to zero, that there were no more deaths from COVID-19. That's when we're going to reopen. And it's like, what? What? I mean, are we saying no one is going to be allowed to drive cars until there are no more deaths from accidents in cars? No one is going to be able to go back to work until there are no more deaths from the flu, because there are deaths every day from the flu. And I think this is part of what this article is getting to, that there is this initial idea of when is it safe to go back to work. But part of a pandemic ending is when people finally get to the point that they're tired of it and they just say, do you know what? We're just doing this. We're going to live. Whoever dies, dies. Let's just move forward. Which actually isn't that bad of a strategy. Isn't that bad of a strategy, because eventually you do end up with herd immunity, and you know, ta-da. It's been really interesting to me to watch the situation with Sweden, because as I've mentioned in the past, Sweden just said, okay, so anybody who's worried about this, Anybody who's at risk, you go hide. Let the rest of us develop herd immunity to it. And then we'll get the replication rate down below 1, and then we'll be fine. That's actually not a bad idea. I think maybe that idea would have been better than what we did, because 6 trillion dollars is a lot of money. And I know everybody was concerned about overwhelming the healthcare system, but I think the American people would have been smart enough that they would have social distanced. The people who are at risk would have stayed home. I think we could have gotten to exactly the same result as Sweden without trashing the economy. You know, how long that trashing will haunt us, we'll have to wait and see. How fast we can get back from this, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, there was going to be some sort of downturn, no matter what, because even if you just said anybody who's scared stay home, you know, I mean, there would have been a downturn because obviously less people would go to restaurants, less people would go to movies, less people, you know, any sort of outing would have declined. So we'll see. We'll see where this all runs out. But back to the article. So what's interesting to me about this article is I think it puts into perspective a little bit where we are with COVID-19. So after talking about that either you actually have a medical end where the incidence and death rates plummet, or you have a social end to it, the author of the article goes on to say, in other words, an end can occur not because a disease has been vanquished, but because people grow tired of panic mode and learn to live with the disease. So Alan Brandt, Harvard historian, said that something similar is already happening with COVID-19. As we have seen in the debate about opening the economy, many questions about the so-called end are determined not by medical and public health data, but by socio-political processes. And honestly, they should be determined by socio-political processes. Because I know that there are some people that are saying, well, we just have to trust the science. We just have to trust the science, and we just have to follow what the medical people are. Well, okay, but medical people have one job, and that's to save lives. That's their job. That's their focus. Rightly so. Thank God that's their focus. But life is a balance. And we do this all day long with a bunch of other things, like driving. I am taking my life in my hands by driving. I may be the best driver in the world, which I'm not. I may be the best driver in the world, but that doesn't mean there isn't some crazy out there who's drunk, who will be coming towards me as I drive on the road, and he might swerve and crash his car into mine, and we both explode, and I die. Okay, there's a whole bunch of people that die every year from driving. That doesn't mean that nobody drives. But if you would consult medical people and say, can more lives be saved if no one drives? Of course they're going to say yes, because they're interested in saving lives. Same thing with COVID-19, same thing with the flu. Would it be better? Would we save lives if no one went out of their houses? Well, yeah, of course we would. So I think when the historians talk about the fact that many of the so-called questions about open ending are determined not by medical and public health data, but by socio-political processes, I think that's exactly right. That's what it has to be, because it's all risk assessment. So Dora Varga, a historian at the University of Exeter, says that endings are very, very messy. She says, looking back, we have a weak narrative. For whom does the epidemic end, and who gets to say? Now then, what's interesting is that the author of this article does go back and start looking at some of the other epidemics. And so there's a whole section in this article called In the Path of Fear. And so the author says, of the article says, an epidemic of fear can occur even without an epidemic of illness. Dr. Susan Murray of the Royal College of Surgeons in Dublin saw that firsthand in 2014 when she was a fellow at a rural hospital in Ireland. This is in Ireland, okay? In the preceding months, more than 11,000 people in West Africa had died of Ebola, a terrifying viral disease that was highly infectious and often fatal. And Ebola is. Ebola has a very, I think it 60% or something like that will kill you. Ebola's bad. The epidemic seemed to be waning, and no cases had occurred in Ireland, but the public fear was palpable. Quote, on the streets and on the wards, people are anxious, Dr. Murray recalls in an article recently in an article in the New England Journal of Medicine. Quote, having the wrong skin color is enough to earn you the side eye from your fellow passengers on the bus or train. Cough once and you will find them shuffling away from you. Dublin hospital workers were warned to prepare for the worst. They were terrified and worried that they lacked protective equipment. When a young man arrived in the emergency room from a country with Ebola patients, no one wanted to go near him. Nurses hid and doctors threatened to leave the hospital. Okay, so that was Ebola, and Ebola is bad. Now, the one thing about Ebola that was better than COVID-19 is that you did have to have fluid-to-fluid contact. So at least it just wasn't floating in the air like COVID-19. So Dr. Murray alone dared to treat him, she wrote, but his cancer was so advanced that she could only offer his comfort care. A few days later, tests confirmed the man did not have Ebola. He died an hour later. 3 days afterwards, the World Health Organization declared the Ebola epidemic was over. Dr. Murray wrote, if we are not prepared to fight fear and ignorance as actively and as thoughtfully as we fight any other virus, it is possible that fear can do terrible harm to vulnerable people, even in places that never see a single case of infection during the outbreak. A fear epidemic can have far worse consequences when complicated by issues of race, privilege, and language. I'm getting my mail. One moment. I think I'm supposed to be getting some packages today. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's one package. Goodness. I hope that isn't... I got lots of ants all of a sudden. I'm hoping that isn't inside. We had a weird thing happen. I'm going to have to back up and try this again. We had a weird thing happen where we got a box. My wife got a box, and so I dutifully brought it inside and put it on her desk. She opened it up, and it was just full of ants. I mean, it was just crawling with ants. So I put one of those little tarot things in our mailbox, and we thought we had that kind of under control, but man, we've got ants like crazy in the mailbox here. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the box on top of my car. And yeah, lots and lots and lots of ants. And we'll just let them eat that tarot stuff, and that will take care of them. Okay, so anyways, bubonic plague. So now, now let's talk about bubonic plague. Goodness, bubonic plague. I'm going to stop and just finish this up out here outside because it is just so gorgeous. And I don't want to take the box in with all the weirdness in it with the ants and stuff. So bubonic plague, I don't... Doesn't feel like there's any breeze, but I'm going to make a bunch of shuffling sounds here. Just a second. I'm going to put the wind filter on this. Just so that in case there is some wind, it'll take care of this. Sorry for the weirdness. Sorry. Okay. Now then. Make sure I'm still going. Okay. So bubonic plague has struck several times in the past, the article says, in the past 2,000 years, killing millions of people and altering the course of history. Such a glorious day. Listen. It's not actually raining. Let me roll down the other windows. It's not actually raining. It's the remainder of the rain dripping through the leaves. And do you hear the birds? Wow, beautiful. Anyways, bubonic plague has struck several times in the past 2,000 years, killing millions of people and altering the course of history. Each epidemic amplified the fear that came with the next outbreak. The disease is caused by a strain of bacteria, Yersiniana pestis, that lives on fleas that live on rats. But the bubonic plague, which became known as the Black Death, can also be passed from infected person to infected person through respiratory droplets. So it cannot be eradicated simply by killing rats. I mean, it's this thing is bad. Oh, so in the 14th century, a chronicler named Agnolo de Tura said, "It is impossible for a human tongue to recount the awful truth. Indeed, no one who did not see such horribleness can be called blessed." The infected, he wrote, okay, this is where it gets gruesome. So, hop forward about, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds or so. Give you a chance. Hop forward. Okay. The infected, he wrote, swell beneath the armpits and in their groins and fall over while talking. And the dead were buried in pits and in piles. In Florence, wrote Giovanni Boccana, no more respect was accorded to dead people than would be nowadays be accorded to dead goats. Some hid in their homes, others refused to accept the threat. Their way of coping, Boccaccio wrote, was to drink heavily, enjoy life to the full, go around singing and merrymaking and gratifying all of one's cravings when the opportunity arose, and shrug off the whole thing as one enormous joke. I think we've seen that in Wisconsin yesterday. That pandemic ended, but the plague reoccurred. One of the worst outbreaks began in China in 1855, spread worldwide, killed more than 12 million people in India alone. Health authorities in Bombay burned whole neighborhoods trying to get rid of the plague, and nobody knew if it made a difference, the Yale historian Frank Snowden said. Okay. So, you know, now, at this point, bubonic plague, the cases are rare, and they can be successfully treated with antibiotics. But any report of a case of the plague stirs up fear. So, as far as one disease that actually ended, really, truly actually ended, smallpox. Among the diseases to achieve a medical end is smallpox, but it is exceptional for several reasons. There is an effective vaccine which gives lifelong protection. The virus, variola major, has no animal host, so eliminating the disease in humans meant total elimination, and its symptoms are so unusual that the infection is obvious, allowing for effective quarantines and contact tracing. So there's always this interesting dance with viruses between how infectious they are, how fast they kill their hosts, how quickly it's obvious that you have something. And that's one of the things, obviously, that makes COVID-19 really interesting is there's a whole bunch of people who are asymptomatic and yet they're spreading the disease and you just don't know. Fascinating stuff. This is really fascinating stuff. Okay, we're about ready to get into some gruesome stuff again. And this is just to remind us that there have been other things in the world that have been bad. So give me another 15, 30 seconds or so. Here we go. Okay, individuals infected with the virus developed a fever, then a rash that turned into pus-filled spots, which became encrusted and fell off, leaving scars. The disease killed 3 out of 10 of its victims, often after immense suffering. In 1633, an epidemic among Native Americans disrupted all the Native communities in the Northeast and certainly facilitated English settlement in Massachusetts. William Bradford, leader of the Plymouth Colony, wrote an account of the disease in Native Americans saying that the broken pustules would effectively glue a patient's skin to the mat on which he lay only to be torn off. Bradford wrote, quote, "When they turn them, a whole side will flay off at once, as it were, and they will be all of a gore blood most fearful to behold." Okay, I warned you this was going to be gruesome. Okay, you've got 1918, the flu epidemic then. The flu epidemic of 1918 is held up as an example of the ravages of a pandemic and the value of quarantines and social distancing. Before it ending, the flu killed 50 million to 100 million people worldwide. It preyed on young to middle-aged adults, orphaning children, depriving families of breadwinners, killing troops in the midst of World War I. A prominent doctor dispatched to Camp Devens near Boston reported on what was going on there. He said that he saw hundreds of stalwart young men in the uniform of their country coming into wards of the hospital in groups of 10 or more. They were placed on the cots until every bed is full, yet others crowd in. Okay, this is a little gruesome. Jump forward 15 seconds or so. Their faces soon wear a bluish cast. A depressing cough brings up blood-stained sputum. In the morning, the dead bodies are stacked up in the morgue like cordwood. So the virus, this same doctor wrote, quote, "demonstrated the inferiority of human inventions in the destruction of human life." So the article goes on to say, after sweeping the world, the flu faded away, evolving into a variant of the more benign flu that comes around every year. Quote, the doctor said, "maybe it was like a fire that having burned the available and easily accessible wood burns down." In the article, it says that the plague of 1918 ended socially too. World War II was over. People were ready for a fresh start, a new era, and eager to put the nightmare of disease and war behind them. Until recently, the 1918 flu was largely forgotten. So there have been other pandemics. The Hong Kong flu, 1968, 1 million people died worldwide, including 100,000 in the United States, mostly people older than 65. Still the seasonal flu. Flu is just flu now, you know, et cetera. So when will COVID-19 end? That's the question. One possibility, historians say, is that, this is from the article, is that the coronavirus pandemic could end socially before it ends medically. People may grow so tired of the restrictions that they declare the pandemic over, even as the virus continues to smolder in the population before a vaccine or an effective treatment is found. Quote, I think there's this sort of social psychological issue of exhaustion and frustration. The Yale historian Naomi Rogers says, we may be in a moment when people are just saying, that's enough. I deserve to be able to return to my regular life. Dr. Rogers also said there is this sort of conflict now. Who gets to claim the end? Dr. Rogers said, if you push back against the notion of it ending, What are you pushing back against? What are you claiming when you say, no, it's not ending? The challenge, Dr. Brandt said, is that there will be no sudden victory. Trying to define the end of a pandemic will be a long and difficult process. So, I mean, it's interesting, but when you put this in perspective with things that have come before, there have been things that have come before that have just been horrific. And granted, there are people dying. But so far in the United States, we haven't had medical systems overwhelmed. We have seen in places like Italy, medical systems overwhelmed. People do wish to get back to work. We do wish to get our economy going again. And I don't really think there's going to be much of an economy left if we say, oh, we're just going to lock down until we have a vaccine, because that's months away. So I personally, I'm planning, if Cracker Barrel has their dining room open tomorrow, I'm planning on going to eat at Cracker Barrel with a friend. And probably, if Gailey's is back open, I'm going to go see if I can find a buddy to go with me to Gailey's. You know, because we got to start getting moving. And there will be higher number of cases, but we got to get to herd immunity, because this is not good. And I think we can be smart enough about this that we can wash our hands, keep our hands away from our eyes and our mouths. You know, we can cut the thing down, that maybe we can cut the spread down to under 1% just with social distancing, just with washing our hands. And if there's a hot spot that arises, maybe then, you know, we lock down a little tighter. But I think, I mean, I'm personally ready to start opening this thing back up and getting back to doing what we're doing, because our economy needs a little boost at this point. We have too many people unemployed. But through all of this, the human race has survived. And through all of this, God is kind and good to us, and He will watch over us and help us. And all is well. All is well. Because the birds are still singing, and our Heavenly Father knows where every single one of them is. And will He not care for us as much? This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.